Spring is here, and so are the deals at Dee Dee's Discounts. From trendy outfits to home makeovers, Dee Dee's has all the deals you need. I'm talking everything from sandals and sundresses to spring throw pillows and scented candles. You love a good deal? Get in your bag and get to Dee Dee's Discounts.
J.R.R. Tolkien once envisioned his legendarium as a, quote, majestic whole that left room for, quote, other minds and hands, wielding paint and music and drama. One fascinating way that vision lives on is through the imaginative worlds of tabletop role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons. I'm Aaron, your host, and today I'm joined by Clint Schreier from the Claim to Game podcast. Together, we'll uncover how Tolkien's groundbreaking world-building and storytelling laid the groundwork for these games, and ask the intriguing question, would they even exist without the pattern that Tolkien created? Clint, let's wander. Welcome to Lore of the Rings.
Hey, thanks for having me, Aaron. Glad to be here.
Now, before we get too far, perhaps we need to define what a tabletop role-playing game is. So what is a TTRPG?
Thank you for using the acronym. So, yeah, a tabletop role-playing game, in its very bare-bones essence, is when you are with other people telling a collaborative story together. It's not just sitting around a campfire telling stories, though it could be. What makes it unique is that you use rules, mechanics, and dice to determine your actions and whether you're successful or not in whatever you're trying to do. So it's collaborative storytelling with rules and dice. That's probably the easiest way I could say it.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think most people are likely familiar or at least have heard of Dungeons and Dragons. But until I met with you and started talking with you a few weeks ago, I did not know that there were any other role-playing games out there besides Dungeons and Dragons.
Hundreds. Wow. There are hundreds upon hundreds of different role-playing games. You name a genre of fantasy and science fiction or anything else you've picked up a book for, probably a role-playing game for it.
Okay, fantastic. And Dungeons and Dragons, were they the first ones, or did they just get most popular the quickest?
Yeah, so I think the easiest way to go to the origin, because most people would say Dungeons and Dragons was the world's greatest tabletop role-playing game.
Okay.
And it was created in 1974 by Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson. And they created more of a war games game where there were miniatures and they were recreating battles and trying to live out these very epic quests. But Gary Gygax was very much influenced by fairy tales, which I think that is a connection that both he and Tolkien have. Fairy tales very much influenced his desire to make a game where he could live out these fairy tales that he had heard from the time he was a kid. So I would say it probably is the origin of the tabletop role playing. Mm-hmm. It's a very young, very new hobby. It hasn't been around. It wasn't around in the 1900s, at least, early 1900s, to my knowledge, but more around the 70s. That's where it sort of became what it is today.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also Dungeons and Dragons is featured pretty heavily in the series Stranger Things on Netflix. You've got the kids playing D&D down in the basement. That's fantastic. Clint, do you think that these games would exist without the influence of Tolkien and Lord of the Rings?
That's a yes and but kind of question.
Okay.
So there's a very famous article that was posted in 1985 in Dungeon Magazine. It was an article written by Gygax because he kept getting the frequently asked question, was Dungeons and Dragons influenced by J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So 1974, it was after the publication of Lord of the Rings, obviously. And with that, he actually made a statement that he says that Tolkien very limitedly influenced his creation.
Interesting.
A lot of people didn't buy it.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't buy it. But his real, I think his deviation from saying that it was Tolkien that inspired him was that he read Lord of the Rings. He read The Hobbit. Mm-hmm. And he liked them, but he also felt that they were very slow. And I think part of that is because of the detail and the depth in which Tolkien writes. You and I were talking a different time about how Tolkien makes his world so believable because of the great characters that he develops. Without that character development, I don't know if Lord of the Rings would really come alive for me like it has for thousands of other people. So when Gygax was looking at Lord of the Rings and also looking at Dungeons and Dragons, he more took a step back and was looking at the character tropes and the different myths and legends that he brought in more to like the legendarium of creatures and monsters and also the pacing, right? So yeah. Lord of the Rings is very sweeping, you know, an epic fantasy. It's like the birth of the epic fantasy came out of J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. D&D is a little bit more fast paced. And I think that Gygax would more so probably credit, I believe it's Robert E. Howard, who created the Conan the Barbarian, sword and sorcery kind of style of play, fast and quick, adventures of action. And Tolkien does have those moments, but then usually there's almost like a de-escalation period in a lot of the Lord of the Rings books where I feel like, all right, that was really intense. And now we're going to go recover from that intense experience and kind of contemplate the deeper things that Tolkien was trying to talk about. So, yes, I do believe there were influences. And you can see that in some of their games. Some of the early games of D&D where, you know, Tunnels and Trolls, Battles of the Five Armies was actually a campaign, an adventure in the early D&D system. So you could actually play that out in more of a war game style with the original D&D game. So yes, there's influence. I think there was also some legal trouble that came. Yes. I think there was a cease and desist letter that came to Gygax and some of the, and I don't know the exact details, but I know that the word hobbit was used in some of these modules and that wasn't cool, at least in the eyes of the Tolkien estate.
That is entirely a Tolkien creation, the word hobbit.
Gygax did say that the idea of Ents was taken from, I believe, I don't know if it was a Norwegian word for giant. And he thought that was very unique as far as the monsters that he pulled in. The orcs and the goblins are definitely present in D&D for sure. As sort of like the cannon fodder that a lot of new players are destroying to try to build experience and level up their characters so they can become more powerful. But I think that Gygax was going more towards, I have taken things from the Brothers Grimm. I have taken things from fairy tales. I've taken things from other science fantasy and fiction authors. He didn't want to attribute it just to Tolkien.
Yeah.
To take a step back, though, for me personally, I cannot think about Dungeons and Dragons without thinking of Lord of the Rings.
Okay. Explain that. Why is that?
When I was a kid, I remember I would come home from school. My mom worked, my dad worked. I had two working parents. And so we'd get off the school bus. We'd walk into the house. My brother and sister would get a snack or whatever. And we had this little tiny TV, like with a VHS player that was connected to it that sat on our kitchen counter.
That's ancient technology.
Oh, it was awesome, right? And I had the VHS version of the Fellowship of the Ring.
Oh, wow.
Right? Peter Jackson's Fellowship of the Ring on VHS. And I remember punching that thing into the VHS player, making sure I hit rewind because I watched it almost every day after school. And when I started pressing play, there was for the PlayStation 2, the Fellowship of the Ring video game, or it might've been the Two Towers video game. I can't remember which one was coming out, but I watched that preview every day. Right. And all I could think of was, oh my gosh, you're telling me I can be Aragorn. You're telling me I can be Legolas and kill orcs and go and save the world. You're telling me I can be a little hobbit and I can go and do the things that only a small little heroic hobbit can do. That was awesome. And it was in a video game. So then pull it back, you know, to that moment and then push me into the future almost 20 some years when I'm first introduced to a tabletop role-playing game by my brother-in-law. And he's like, Clint, I think you would like D&D. I'm like, what is that? He's like, well, it's basically a video game, but you get to play the character in the video game and do things that sometimes video games don't let you do. You can go beyond the video game, beyond the story book that you read. You can go beyond the movie that you watched when you were, you know, a 10-year-old boy sitting in your kitchen watching VHS and munching down tortilla chips and who knows what else I was dipping it in. So, you know, I can't separate that idea from, I'm living a story unwritten and I am now able to do things that are not confined to written works or recorded works. It's just amazing to me.
This weekend only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Spring is here, and so are the deals at Dd's Discounts. From trendy outfits to home makeovers, Dd's has all the deals you need. I'm talking everything from sandals and sundresses to spring throw pillows and scented candles. You love a good deal? Get in your bag and get to Dd's Discounts.
Yeah, I really love that you speak to that idea of you can go beyond sort of what was written or what was defined, and you kind of can create this own story as you go throughout a Dungeons and Dragons campaign or some of these other tabletop RPGs. Like Tolkien even spoke of the idea of leaving room for other minds and hands to expand upon the work of Middle Earth. Right. So in your opinion, how do you see tabletop RPGs? How do they sort of embody that spirit of collaborative storytelling and world building?
What's great about tabletop RPGs is there's always a starting point. And the starting point is either the core rule book of whatever tabletop game you're playing, whether it be Dungeons and Dragons. You know, there is a One Ring game that was created by Free League Publishing not too long ago. In fact, I was going to mention this. They made almost $1.5 million on the Kickstarter.
Oh, wow.
When it came out.
Okay.
And just for you guys to know, that's a big chunk of change.
Yes.
For a game. It was amazing. So you start out with the source book. And with the source book comes all of these different avenues that you can go into. So if you're playing a video game like Skyrim, you're choosing your class. What is it that your character does in this made-up believe world? What is it that your character does in this make-believe world? Mm-hmm. You're also choosing your race, or in some games, they call that your ancestry. Am I a human? Am I an elf? Am I a dwarf? Am I a hobbit? Or in D&D, it's called halfling, so that we don't infringe on copyright. So it's really giving you the structure, the starting point to launch into the story. Now, some stories are pre-written. You can get a pre-made adventure. In fact, I know there's supplements that have come out where you can dive into Moria and learn. You can go and have your own adventure into the mines of Moria, or you can go into the Wilderlands, or you can go up towards the north where Angmar is, and just places that you really didn't get to explore when you were reading the books. Now, if you're somebody who watched the movies, this is even more exciting, because if you watch the movies first, the books go deeper. Mm-hmm. And if you read the books, tabletop RPGs allow you to go even deeper than that, because now you start to do what Tolkien asks. You get to be a part of those hands that expands the world. And it may not make $1.5 million the story that you're creating at a table with other people, but being together with others, you're going to have ideas and adventures that you could never do on your own. You could do it on your own. There are such things as solo RPGs, solo tabletop RPGs. In fact, there is actually what's called Strider mode. For those of you guys
Strider mode, right?
Yeah. Aragorn's nickname from the town of Bree.
Right.
The Breelanders called him Strider. And Strider mode is simply you using the core rule set of the One Ring Second Edition made by Free League with the rules that have been expanded by Sean Tompkins, who's known for games like Ironsworn or Starforged. And you are really journaling. You could record yourself, much like we're doing right now. There's plenty of people that do solo RPG podcasts, and you're really going on the adventure with them. So your original question was, you know, how does this help you live the story unwritten? It's limitless. You can do whatever you want within the means of the rules. And that's where the core rules come in and kind of give you the boundaries of this world. And then your imagination is the limit.
Yeah, that's really amazing. These games can provide just enough parameters and rules so that it feels like a cohesive game. But as you say, really, your imagination is the limit. You can explore these other areas that don't get a lot of attention either in the movies or the books. You can explore what it feels like to be a halfling or a hobbit or a dwarf. You can kind of put yourself into that role and experience a story from that perspective.
You know, my favorite character in The Hobbit is Beorn.
Okay.
I love that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Beorn, the skin changer. Yes.
The skin changer, a wild man, looks like a bear when he's, you know, roaming, looking
loves
and protecting
animals.
You know, is it Carrock? Is that the rock Carrock, in which
the Carrock? Yeah. Where the eagles drop off Bilbo and Gandalf. And that's sort of his place. He calls it the Carrock. Yes.
Like Bjornings are the descendants of Beorn. Mm-hmm. And from the time of The Hobbit, like I don't know if he got a wife or what exactly happened. I think there's a small little snippet of text that allows people to expand on that lore. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can be a Beorning and you can go around and maybe even become a shapeshifter within the world of Lord of the Rings.
Oh,
and it's living out Beorn, that wild man. I just imagine a hairy man with a hairy chest and big courage and a desire to kill all the orcs.
Yes, exactly. I love that. Clint, you've already touched on this a little bit. I think you've mentioned one tabletop RPG game that is an officially licensed Lord of the Rings game.
Mm-hmm.
What else is out there for Lord of the Rings fans who want to try their hand at some of these RPGs?
Well, obviously, I think you can go, if you want, with Dungeons & Dragons. My opinion is that it is not the most beginner-friendly of tabletop RPGs, though that's how it's marketed. It's how it was marketed to me. You know, D&D 5e was supposed to be the streamlined version of all of its predecessors. Mm. My suggestion, if you want to try something that's Lord of the Rings-esque, more sword and sorcery, maybe more like Conan, but still gives you that feel of I am a ranger, I am a warrior, I am a fighter, I would use Dragonsbane, or it might be Dragonbane by Free League Publishing as well. They're actually one of my favorite publishers, and the reason is that they create very streamlined, direct rules. I think it's a story of mirth and mayhem. So it allows you to be funny. However, character death is very high. It is very easy for your character to die in these very harsh worlds where, you know, monsters are abundant. But that, to me, creates the believability.
Yeah.
Right. So we talked about, you know, the believability with Tolkien is that he creates characters that are believable. In a real world, if a monster came up and slashed you, I don't think it would slash you 32 times and you'd still be walking like Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You have characters that are real characters, not superhumans. You know, they are fallible. They are able to die. And I think Dragonbane has a really great way for people to enter the hobby, get the idea of a character with different statistics like strength and wits and, you know, intelligence and also maybe an element of magic, but not get too overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. So that would be my recommendation, is find something that is not too overwhelming with the rules so that you can get the feel of telling stories. Because once you can tell stories, once you can interact and you kind of get the rhythm and beat of playing a tabletop role-playing game, then you can really plug and play, right? You can crank up the crunchiness if you want to do more math and do more dice rolling, or there are some more narrative-based games that you could play that have more of a storytelling feel, and the rules are more just second fiddle, and they're there to keep boundaries and make it different than just telling a story, like I said, around a campfire.
Yeah, I love that. Those are great introductions. Are there any other, like, Lord of the Rings games, tabletop games that are officially licensed? What was the one that you mentioned before? You called it the One Ring, I think you called it.
Yeah, so the One Ring Second Edition is Free League Publishing. It came out November 2021 was when this was funded on Kickstarter. So this one is actually, like I said, so a lot of tabletop games come in editions. Mm-hmm. Edition just means that they didn't, you know, the rules were good, but people saw that there was a need to streamline them. Maybe there were aspects of the game that weren't available when the book was written, or things that people thought would be cool. And so they come out with a second edition, one that has better rules. In this case, I think Cubicle 7 was the company that actually owned the rights to the Lord of the Rings game with the first edition of the One Ring. And so then this was picked up after Cubicle 7 lost those rights or decided not to move on with the project. And that's when Free League picked it up. But at this time, that is the Lord of the Rings game.
Okay.
Like, there is no other companies making Lord of the Rings materials. I think there are board games, Lord of the Rings board games. The thing is that a tabletop role-playing game in my opinion, is different than a board game, right? Like there's an element, they can mesh. There are definitely ones that almost marry the two ideas of having a board with pieces. And, you know, some people think of the Stranger Things D&D where there's actual figures that are moving around, or maybe they've watched Big Bang Theory and they see the miniatures and figures moving around on a landscape with different structures. But in my mind, tabletop focuses more on storytelling. And a board game focuses more on here is a desired goal that we are going for, and here are the pieces that need to move around, and here's the objective that needs to happen. So one is more storytelling based, the other is more I need to win this game and here's how I do it.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, one of the Christmas presents I received this year was a Lord of the Rings board game. And I can't remember off the top of my head what it's called, but it's basically just the Fellowship moving from Rivendell to Mount Doom. And it's there are little figurines on the board. Yes, we are rolling dice, but it's very much of a move your pieces along the board, trying to get the ring to Mount Doom. And it's very collaborative. It's one of these collaborative play type games where it's you and everybody that you're playing with against the board. And so my son and I, we've been figuring it out. So far, our win rate is 50%. The game Sauron has claimed the One Ring.
Oh boy,
50% of the time. So it's pretty dark and dangerous and perilous. But I would say it's nothing like it. Well, I guess you've got little figurines and dice rolls, but it is very much a A to B to C type of a board game rather than some of these role playing games where you have a different role and you're working together on a campaign. And the storytelling and the experience of coming together and making that story using your imagination, it's nothing like that.
I have an analogy that I think really fits what's the difference between a board game and a tabletop RPG. I imagine like if I went to a zoo, right? So if I go to a zoo, the animals are in their cage and I know what to expect. There's the little placards that tell me what the animal's all about, and I can experience that animal in a confined and set way. A tabletop RPG would be like if that zoo was in Africa and I left the zoo and now I'm going out into the wild to experience the animals out there.
Yes.
There is no bounds, you know, and I don't know if I'm going to see an animal or if I'm not going to see an animal. I hope I see an animal. But going out into that wild safari versus being inside of the confined zoo, that to me, that's what the difference is between a board game in a tabletop role-playing game where you're actually going and living out experiences that you don't know the set outcome exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it also falls back onto, like what you've said before, the idea of the storytelling experience that comes together. Like, explain that a little bit deeper. So you've got these rules. People know that you have to roll dice. You've got different classes, you know, elf versus halfling, whatever. Like, why is storytelling such a key element to these role-playing games?
Yeah, you said the key element. So there's a big part that I haven't talked about, and that is the dungeon master or the game master, right? And there's a term called forever GM or forever dungeon master. That's the person who always ends up being the kind of facilitator of the story. That's who I end up being most of the time, because I'm the one bringing my friends together. I'm the one that wants to play these games. And the idea of the game master, for anybody who doesn't play D&D is a licensed, has a licensed a monopoly on the word dungeon master.
Okay.
The goal of the facilitator is to allow each person at the table to bring out in the story something only they can bring out, which is their perspective, which is their actions, which adds to the story in a way that if you were just playing by yourself, you wouldn't be able to do that, right? One mind is going to bring up your own past, your own experiences, your own thoughts, your own schema, as I used to talk about in the world of teaching. When I was a teacher, we talked about schema, and it's everything that you had previously learned that you're bringing to the table when you go into that classroom. A story cannot just be created in a tabletop game with one schema unless you're playing a solo game. So the GM, their goal is to give everybody a spotlight to create a story that could not be made by any other group of people anywhere.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent.
If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
There is no exact replica of the story that you are doing. There could be 5 different groups. I'm choosing an arbitrary number 5. 5 different groups playing the exact same adventure that was written by, you know, Dungeons & Dragons, Hasbro, Wizards of the Coast. And every time, that story will be different. Because you have different people sitting at the table. And I would even venture to guess, if you had the same set of people, which doesn't happen often, play the same adventure path more than once, that story is going to be different. Mm-hmm. There may be similarities because they've gone through those scenarios before, but really it's going to be different based on the schema that's being brought to the table by the storytellers that are getting their spotlight facilitated by the Dungeon Master.
Yeah, I really love that you say it that way, and especially in the context of looking at the Lord of the Rings, because one of the major themes of Lord of the Rings is you have this set of people who were not scientifically chosen, who otherwise would be rivals, or at least, you know, distant, not friends, but, you know, neighbors, I guess you could say. But they come together and each has a role to play. Each has a perspective to bring, and not one of them would have gotten very far on their own. It's like you look at the Fellowship of the Ring and the breaking of the Fellowship. We always mourn, you know, Sam and Frodo across the lake and Merry and Pippin get taken by the Uruk-hai, and Gandalf has already fallen. You know, like, we always mourn when the Fellowship breaks, but it continues to mold and shift and alliances form and change. But not at any point is anyone in the Fellowship, they're not alone, right? Except maybe the exception of Gandalf when he's being, you know, resurrected, if you will. But for the most of the story, the whole Fellowship is together, right? And Frodo even says this to Sam. He's like, Sam, I would not have gotten very far without you, like without the friendship that we have, without your help, your support. And this experience is only going to be lived once because we're all bringing our full selves to the table and to the story. I just think that's a really amazing idea.
You know, with the idea of collaboration, right? The word collaborate to me is kind of makes me think of Plato. Right. I have a lot of young kids at home. Mm. And when you bring Play-Doh and you start creating things with Play-Doh, you're mushing things together. And it's so ambiguous at the beginning. But eventually, as you continue to form it and you continue to move it, it turns into something at least hopefully recognizable. My 3-year-old, maybe some of her things are not so recognizable. But that's so cool. And I think there were even times when Tolkien was writing that he didn't know where they were going to go next. I know that Tolkien had other people in his circles that helped influence his decisions and how he wrote and his experiences in his life. But you just get that feedback so instantly at a D&D table.
Yeah.
And the rules help facilitate and move that story along quicker than an author mm-hmm. writing a novel.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Clint, where can the Wanderer who is listening right now find out more about what you're doing with Claim to Game?
Yeah. So just if you don't know who I am and what I do, Claim to Game is a podcast that helps people get together with friends and have a time to tell amazing stories through tabletop role playing games. You can find me on claimtogamepodcast.com. That is our official website. You can also listen to me on anywhere, any of the listening apps for your podcasts. I'm on all of them. For this episode, for any listener who joined in today, I have created a special spot for you to get plugged in to what I do. So Aaron's going to have a unique link that he's going to put in the show notes that you guys are going to be able to click on. I'm actually going to provide a special quick start guide for anybody who wants to quick start the One Ring second edition, right? You guys are here because you love Lord of the Rings. So there is going to be a link in that page that allows you to go and get the digital copy. Trying to do you guys a solid here because I went into Amazon and saw that it's temporarily unavailable for the physical copy. So I don't want you to go there and hit a dead end. But the digital copy is there, and the starter kit will get you guys started with anything you need related to the One Ring second edition. I'm also giving you my quick start guide, which is how do you get a game started with friends? How can you get it started in 30 days or less? And I'm focusing it directly with the One Ring. So I'm going to, you know, suggest different supplements, things that can add on and expand your story. Also, there are a few episodes that I think any new game master or somebody who wants to run a game would really, really enjoy. I think it's episode 25, 26, and 27. So I pop those there really easy for you guys to dive into if you want my perspective on how to tell a good story, bring people together, but it's all up to you guys. So that's where they can find me. And also you can email me at clint.shire, just like Bilbo Baggins of the Shire, clint.shire@claimtogamepodcast.com.
All right. Fantastic. Fantastic. And we'll have all of those bonuses as well. There will be a link in the show notes. Or if you need to remember that, you can go to ringspodcast.com/claimtogame, and all of those resources will be there for you. So Clint, final question here. And we kind of got into this just a little bit before. You were talking about VHSs and old technology and Dorito chips and all those great things. What influence have Tolkien's stories had on your life?
I'm going to try not to get emotional here. So,
hey, we get emotional all the time. Yeah. It's fine. It's Lord of the Rings, man.
Yeah. So I grew up and I always felt like kind of a loner. I didn't feel like I fit into any specific friend group. I was the kid in middle school that walked around with the old red book of the trilogy of the Lord of the Rings, checked out from our school library, constantly checked it out like all year. Like nobody else wanted to read it. I wanted to read it constantly. So I was carrying around this big, thick tome that was probably as big as any dictionary. And that's where I escaped. I escaped into these big sweeping stories of people who are facing insurmountable odds to overcome them and get out to the other side where it's lighter, happier, and a better place. I remember, you know, the most emotional part for me in the Lord of the Rings, it's right when the Fellowship, after Gandalf fell, they're moving on from Moria and they're coming up to Lothlorien, and Haldir, their guide into the Lothlorien woods, is speaking. I almost feel like Tolkien is breaking the third wall to us in that moment. And he talks about the light, in the darkness. He's talking about good and evil, good things in your life, bad things in your life. And, you know, he says that, you know, light, goodness, it knows right away what's wrong with evil. Like you look at it and you're just like, man, this is not how life is supposed to be. Life is supposed to be better than this. Like, why are these awful things happening? And then he tails it up and says, however, the darkness looks at the light and just doesn't get it. Doesn't get it, can't conquer it. It won't conquer it yet. And it just really, Lord of the Rings inspires me to not give up, that you can make it to the end. And even if you end up at the end of all things, and things are not the way that they were before, and you feel a little bit sad, I think about all the hobbits coming back to the Shire and seeing how everything has just changed. And they're just like, man, this is different, you know, and certain people that were there before are not there now. And it just feels like, oh, I just wish things were the way they were before. Tolkien's idea of the Undying Lands, you know, crossing across the sea where everything will be made right, everything will be as it should be, and eventually we'll all get there one way. That inspires me. And it makes life just a little bit more rich. So whenever I can read these books, whenever I can talk about them with other people, whenever I can emulate them when I'm playing Lord of the Rings, video games, or even a tabletop role-playing game, doesn't matter the genre, Lord of the Rings has been a huge part of my life. And it is just so cool to be here talking to you about it, Aaron. So for any listeners out there, read all the books, listen to all the podcast episodes, just dive into this wonderful, beautiful world.
Well, that's amazing. That's amazing. I love the inspiration that you find in Tolkien's works, and I feel very similar, very inspired by that, and encouraged to not give up. So that's a beautiful idea. Well, Clint, thank you so much. Thank you for wandering Middle Earth with me today.
You betcha, man. I wish you the best, and all who wander are not lost.
Yes, not all who wander are lost. Thank you to this episode's executive producer, The Old One. If you would like to support the Lore of the Rings podcast, visit ringspodcast.com/member. If you found today's wandering of Middle-earth to be inspiring, please share this episode with a friend. Lastly, if you would like to connect with me, I am most active on Threads. Find a link to my profile at ringspodcast.com and tap the @ symbol near the top. And thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today.
This weekend only at Macy's, it's our lowest prices of spring. How low? Diamond rings, pendants, and earrings, only $399, originally $1,500. Ninja blenders, now $89.99. And $395 men's designer suits, only $99.99. So if you're wondering why you should shop Macy's lowest prices sale, well, the name pretty much says it all. It's our lowest prices for one weekend only. Starts tomorrow at Macy's. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.